This week on What's Going On with Earl Ingram, we sit down with Professor Dr. Rob Vico Baker of Milwaukee to take a hard look at diversity, equity, and inclusion in America. At a time when Democrats and Republicans are deeply divided, Dr. Baker unpacks the state of race relations in our country and how these tensions are shaping the future of government itself. Is America moving forward, or are we dismantling the very progress generations fought for? Dr. Baker brings his insights, his expertise, and his Milwaukee roots to a powerful conversation you won't want to miss. Join us as we ask the tough questions about who we are, where we're going, and what it will take to build a nation where equity and justice are more than just words. Follow us on civicmedia.us or wherever you find your podcast. And don't forget, like and subscribe so you won't miss the conversation. Welcome back to What's Going On with Earl Ingram. You know, having the opportunity to introduce you to very interesting persons and personalities in the city of Milwaukee is an honor and a privilege, and today is no different. My guest is a young man who I met when he was really a young man. And, I mean, not that you're not young now, brother. But right. He was a young man who was doing extraordinary things at a young age. I know his dad and his mom, and they're great people. And so, you know, he was engaged in sports and you know, he was coaching and doing some great things. I never knew the depth of him. I knew in our conversations, my wife and I raised a disabled young man, and this young man that we're going to be talking with this morning would help us and have dialogue and conversation with the disabled young man that we have been raising. So I am thrilled beyond words to introduce you to a young brother who is really doing extraordinary things. My guest for today, Dr. Vico Baker. He is a historian, amongst other things. Good morning to you, dear brother. How are you?
How you doing, brother Earl? Thanks for having me on today.
Man, it's so good to hear your voice and to be able to do this with you, because I know of your origin. I know of the impact that you've had in our community and continue to have as you make your journey. Are you still in sports?
Yeah, I'm definitely still in sports, still coaching. I'm actually the women's coach, or the coach, at Mount Mary University. You know, Mount Mary is nothing but a women's college, so I'm the head coach.
Soccer, right?
Yes, sir.
And so you got engaged and involved, and it's your love. The impact of youth sports, let's talk a little bit about that before we get into the meat of our subject.
You know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, and there was a legendary soccer player in our hometown by the name of Jimmy Banks.
Oh, man.
And by the time I was 14 years old, he snatched me up to be an assistant coach with him at the Mary Ryan Boys and Girls Club. And so I was a pretty good player. You know, I was a Lutheran High School All-American, All-State. But working under Jimmy, I became an even better coach. And, you know, since his passing, I've decided to go even deeper, because his legacy still lives inside of me and all the other players that he's ever coached.
You know, man, as a guy who for 20 years ran the largest youth tackle football program in the state, I echo your sentiments. I honestly miss that whole atmosphere. But, you know, 20 years is a long time to do something. And you know, we impacted the lives of a lot of young people, but anybody who doesn't understand, if it's done properly, the value of youth sports, they really missed the boat.
Yeah, it's, you know, I got kids who are young men who are 40 years old that still become, you know, and that's power in that, especially in our community where we don't oftentimes respect our elders. Athletes always respect the coach.
So I wanted to have a discussion with you this morning, brother, that's been on my mind and on my heart for the last 6 months, or maybe even longer than that, as I'm a product of the civil rights struggle, you know, and, you know, my age demographic and the baby boomers, we were able to see things on television that the generation before us didn't. And so we were able to drink in nightly the impact of the civil rights struggle and all of those people, many of them long since gone, who dedicated their lives to making it possible that somebody like Dr. Banks could make his way into the leadership role that you have and the many different hats that you wear. Now, generations before you, you know, there were other Dr. Banks, but certainly the doors were not open. So I'm watching what is transpiring now, and my heart bleeds because, you know, my generation is phasing out. And, you know, we see a sign that the future is not going to be so as bright as it was for my generation and your generation. What do you say about what you see today happening?
Yeah, I don't know where I heard this saying from, but it's a dying dog barks the loudest.
Right.
And I feel like we're at that time in history where that we're at the end of the 20th century ideologies that really pushed our country to a tipping point during your life. And unfortunately, because we didn't quote unquote kill our enemies using the Sun Tzu term, they've come back to bite us in the butt. And, you know, one thing I want to say to any elder out there, you sound a lot like my dad. When I call my dad, he's ready to go at it. You know what I mean? Like, right. You know what I mean? Like, chill out, Pop. But the one thing that I say is different from your generation and our generation is y'all had black media or media where there was like a campfire effect where every evening you guys would check out the newspaper or the TV. And so I don't ever want anybody that's elder to think that they're not young people or people out here fighting. In fact, this past weekend in Chicago, tens of thousands of people showed up along with the police to make a demonstration. So people are still lit. And even yesterday, there was a young white woman who went into Donald Trump's, you know, restaurant to really, you know, speak to him some truth. And so the struggle still continues, but it is definitely not as strong as when y'all were at the forefront.
So at the root of all of these things, or, you know, maybe not at the root, but clearly it's visible, is something that's called the culture wars. Let's touch on that.
Yeah, I mean, the culture wars, we're not new to the culture wars. The 60s definitely were a time of culture wars. Ronald Reagan, of course, was at the forefront of the culture war. And right now we're in a culture war, I believe, because of there's a fear of a black and brown planet. And you see now, even there's a representative in Missouri who came out, basically said that America is a white nation, and unless they prove it as such, it will die out. And they're really afraid of the diversity that is taking place in this country. And so what you see are talking heads, policymakers, people really driving home narratives that really are dog whistles to people who are really either have explicit or implicit bias. And so you've heard the key terms such as critical race theory or intersectionality or DEI really become these bad words. Unfortunately, what you've seen with companies like Target, though, is once you step away from the support of brown and black people, your company has a big impact on the bottom line.
You know, Dr. Baker, those in the know that the real minority in the world happen to be other than people of color. 9 to 1, the globe is people of color. And so in this nation, it's 60%, about 60% of it is other than black and brown. And so it is clearly something that is at the root of all of the things that are being done and things that are being said. And it's inevitable because, you know, white people in this nation have zero population growth, and they've had it for a long time. And so, you know, it's inevitable that eventually the nation is going to become a majority minority reality. And there's nothing they can do to stop that. But I don't know if the average rank and file white American in this nation is aware of that.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. They're just being sort of dog whistled to, or, you know, they have their, you know, their spidey senses sort of pricked by mainstream media, is because, in my opinion, this is who the real enemy is. The enemy is the billionaire class. These guys have accumulated so much wealth over the last 10, 15 years. And so you have working class white Americans who are really suffering and struggling. They've seen the plants in their neighborhoods fall out. They've seen their friends and loved ones died in the opioid crisis. And they are looking for a boogeyman because they know that they're not, their dollar doesn't go as far as it did just 10, 15 years ago. And so what happens? People in power like to spin, people like Tops. And next thing you know, they're getting mad at the Mexicans who are coming in their country to build the country. And they're hurting their own selves. And you see people in red states that are farmers who are now, you know, in dire need of labor forces while at the same time getting hit by tariffs. And so, unfortunately, you know, this is my struggle, Brother Earl, is the left, the Democrats haven't done a good job painting an alternative narrative, because many of the people that run the Democratic Party or the liberal parties also subscribe to white supremacy. They don't want you to know that, but they definitely don't want to be led by women of color. And that's why so many people bucked when Kamala Harris stepped up to run.
You know what, Dr. Baker, man, the reason, as I was looking for someone to have this dialogue and discussion with who had the courage to speak the truth, you know, it is without question that I found the right guy. Racism exists with Democrats as well. And bigotry exists inside of the Democratic Party as well. And so we're at a point where, you know, I think both parties don't understand this, and I don't know why they don't. But clearly the black community and Hispanic community are the determining factors on who the presidents of the United States are going to be, not just in 2028, but historically, if you go back for over half a century, it is the minority vote, because whites are split down the middle in half Republicans, half Democrats. And so the people who determine who the president is going to be happen to be people of color. And so that's one of the reasons that you see Republicans working feverishly to take away the rights that people fought for, bled and died for, to get people the right to vote.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, me and my comrades who are into both civic politics and also policy, we love referencing this famous Jesse Jackson speech, you know, the Tenley Baptist Church speech from 1984, where he says, man, there's rocks just laying around. And, you know, unfortunately, what has happened since the Obama races is that they made it harder to pick up the rocks. And for him, the rocks were the young progressive white folks, the women who are trying to get into the workforce, brown people, black people, Asian Americans. And what's happened is, you know, with the pullback of the Voting Rights Act and these different laws that have been put in place, such as voter ID and then the gerrymandering, that made it so hard for us to organize. And because we're dealing with a Democratic Party that doesn't really want brown and black people to be fully organized, we have a disconnected, you know, masses out here. And so, you know, it's up to people. You know, I'm 47 years old, you know, and I'm entering, as you know, Bob Rogers told me, I'm entering the fall of my career. And so it's really up for the younger people to connect the dots. We got to educate them, we got to counsel them, but they got to realize, like, when they stay out of the civic process, they're just leveraging their children's future away. And so we got a lot of work to do, a lot of work.
So, Dr. Baker, how do you then, because I've had conversations, and as I tell my generation, it's not our world anymore, right? You know, we had our chance, we had our time. It's just not our world anymore. And yet we keep imposing our views and control over a world that's not ours anymore. But how do you then, when you look at, unfortunately, a segment of younger people, especially black, who, you know, individualism seems to be the order of the day for many who are successful. How do you, with your all of your knowledge and your talents, when you run across that, how do you address it?
Ooh, that's a good question, because every day it's a new struggle. But I would say, when I was younger, I would try to convince, you know, certain young people, or try to really persuade them. You know, anybody that's done door knocking, know there's a time where you try to persuade, and then there's time that you got to push. But I'm gonna be honest, if young people ain't down with my program, I just go to the next one. You know what I mean? Because right. I'm not spending a lot of time trying to wrestle with people who are so trapped by the system. And one of my great mentors, rest in peace, was Harry Belafonte. And in 2006, he told us that there was a time where Martin Luther King came to him and told him that they were integrating into a burning house.
Right.
So we got to realize a lot of our children have been burnt up by the system, and they might not be fully salvageable. But there are definitely enough people out here who are on the right page, who are moving and grooving. In Milwaukee, there's so many millennials and Gen Zs that they might not know exactly to have the right analysis or have everything broken down with the right, you know, letter or code, but they definitely are feeling something. And those are the people that I spend my time with.
You know, as because there is this divide between the boomers and the Generation Xers and generation and millennials and others. And I sometimes say to younger people who say to me, it's our time, y'all need to get out of the way and let us lead. And my response is always, who's stopping you from leading? But we've got to figure out a way to heal that divide, because they're knocking at the door, and the enemy. And, you know, people may say, well, what do you mean by the enemy? If you can't understand and see that somebody is saying, let's do away, slavery wasn't so bad. This is coming from the highest level of our government. Let's do away with all of those things. America, you know, is a great place, and never mind all the negative things that are going on. Let's focus on the positive and not the negative. That's a slap in the face to me, Dr. Baker. That's a slap in the face to me and our ancestors, and because, you know, we know the origin of where that conversation comes from.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, one thing I want to speak to quickly is about the divide. I think that there are a lot of elders in our community, and you were definitely one of those. And in a different time or context, you would be a chief, you know. But unfortunately, you know, your generation was bombed so hard by the state, whether that be because of COINTELPRO or
right.
War on drugs or gangs. And so we have to realize that a lot of people did not grow up with chiefs or elders in their communities and or in their neighborhoods or even in their own families. And so, but there are a lot of us who love our elders and appreciate them. And I'm seeing even more that the Gen Z and millennials do appreciate their elders. It's just that they've experienced so many people that have tried to exploit them.
You're right.
But in terms of, you know, where we're at right now, I just feel like we're at a turning point in history, and America and the world is on two paths. I don't know if you saw this past weekend, but in Australia, you had a whole bunch of white men put on black masks and
yes.
saying immigrants out.
Yes.
I'm like, y'all in Australia, you know what I'm saying? It doesn't get much whiter than Australia. What y'all struggling with out there?
You know, Dr. Baker, it's not just an affront on blacks. Look at what they're doing to Hispanics. The Supreme Court. So the Supreme Court said it's okay to racially profile people. Listen, we've, you know, that's happened before in this nation. But the fact that the Supreme Court openly said that what is taking place is okay. What is taking place in this nation right now with picking up people? They began this assault by saying gang members. Okay, we're gonna pick up gang members, and there are all these gang members running around, illegal immigrants, and they're causing all this ruckus, and they're killing people, and even when they first start talking about this, my response, Dr. Baker, was, you need to look inside of our own borders first. We got more than enough murderers inside of our own borders. Why are we focusing on a handful of people? If at the root of it, Dr. Baker, was we want to keep the crime rate down, we don't have to look too far, do we?
Yeah, you don't have to look too far. And for me, it was never about crime. It was about votes. And the more brown people you have in this country, the more brown voters you have. And I think that's really what this all lines up to. And unfortunately, the Supreme Court, I teach black history. And, 1857, there was a Dred Scott case. Chief Justice Roger Taney says basically the white man has no, the black person, black man has no rights. Yeah. And is bound to respect. And so I believe that we've gone back to that time in many ways systematically. But at that time, there are always people who are ready to push and fight back, including Dred Scott. And so I do see, whether it's young white women who are fighting for their reproductive rights in LA, where I spent a lot of time as a young person and as an adult, I see a lot of Latino people pushing back in context with black and brown people. And I'm not as worried about these guys, even if you want to, like I always tell people who like, you can go into these cities with the National Guard, but you got to remember young black people have been participating in urban warfare for fun.
Yes.
For 30 years for fun. They might not be trained, they might not know the type of weaponry that they're using, but they are not afraid. And so unfortunately, I feel just like when people had to join the Massachusetts 54th, you're going to see black men and brown people rise to the call.
But Dr. Baker, that is the fear. That is the fear, is that these young people who are warriors, probably the most intense warriors that we have ever had in the black community, they're not afraid to die. And there's concern that if they're organized, there's hell to pay. I just, for the life of me, Dr. Baker, I don't see, and maybe it's because, I'm blinded, but this gets a whole lot worse before it gets better. And when you are looking at the fact that it's always been people who struggle economically, not just in our communities, but across this nation, are going to suffer even more, Dr. Baker, under what is taking place. Where does this thing go?
Yeah, I'm with you. It definitely gets better before it gets worse. We're on a train moving at 100 miles per hour, and we haven't even begun to pump the brakes. And I worry about, I got a 17-year-old son. I worry about what his generation is going to have to do or deal with. And, but history may not repeat, but it rhymes. You know what I mean? And unfortunately, we're headed towards intense civil disturbance. And, I was in Europe last summer with my son for soccer. And the Europeans, they were in Holland and Paris, they were warning us. It was like, hey, if you don't deal with that, it's going to explode the same way it exploded here. And unfortunately, I'm praying. I'm hoping that we have leadership, who has the courage to step up and push the train off the tracks, but I don't think that that's going to happen.
So let me ask you. So the political leadership in this nation, the Republican Party clearly is off the tracks. The train is off the tracks. We talk about the Democratic Party and its, you know, lapses and the fact that it's made some major mistakes. But I don't know how we can focus solely on the Democratic Party when you look to the right of you and you watch a party that is silent on everything that is taking place. The democracy, as it's been defined, being totally dismantled. Democrats aren't a part of that. So, you know, yes, Democrats have certainly and deserve some criticisms, but man, we need to be constantly talking about a party that has allowed one man to become God. Mm.
Yeah, definitely the Republican Party of today is not the Republican Party of even George Bush's era.
Right.
You know, when you look at the clips of both Bush presidents, they were talking about ways to try to do healthy and immigration policy.
Right.
They may have been willing to destroy other countries, but they definitely were not trying to destroy America. And, what we see right now is, I don't know if we can even describe this as a Republican Party. It's the MAGA Party. And, you know, I'm going to be honest, as someone who engages in politics and has participated in politics, I'm not mad at MAGA because they're trying to win. They have an agenda. They put it out. They called it, Project 2025. And they went for it just like a quarterback. You know, they went for the home run. They went for the touchdown. And so I can't be mad at that all the way. What I'm mad at is the people who claim to be Americans, people who claim to be patriots, people who claim to represent the Constitution, people who fought for the U.S. military, who have taken oaths and have aligned with these principles, because these are the people that are supposedly supposed to have the back of America. And so whether you're a Republican or a Democrat, if you believe in the U.S. Constitution, you can never look at what's happening right now with the National Guard going into these cities that has already dropped crime and say that that's American. You cannot look at snatching people up with masks and say that that's American. And so if there's anything that I think we need to all be doing in this country is embracing patriotism. That's one thing my dad has experienced a lot of discrimination in his life, but as a former military person, he is a patriot. He loves America even more than I could understand when I was a young person. And I feel like for those of us who love America, we got to align. It doesn't matter if you're red or blue. We have to fight for our Constitution. And I feel like that might be our saving grace.
You know, Dr. Baker, the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, the Declaration of Independence, all of those things are being weighed in the balance. Man. And so, as you stated earlier, you can't be on the sidelines, man. The only way this gets turned around is the people have to rise up. The people have to be out in the streets. The politricksters aren't going to fix this, Dr. Baker, because at the root of it is, you know, many of them who are kind of, you know, allowing this to take place, because after it's all said and done, these are their careers. And so many of them don't want to risk their career. Man, the people have to hit the streets. The people have to mobilize. The people have to organize, whether it's in rural America or whether it's in urban America. As you stated, both are up against it, and they both have to realize it's going to take that army to force this change.
Yeah, we definitely, I've spent this year going in and out of places like Texas, Missouri, and California, seeing the effects of tornadoes and climate change and climate disaster. And we're talking about everything but that. You know, we're talking about everything but that. We're talking about, you know, Chinese people. We're talking about taking Korean nationals out of their workplace in Georgia.
Yeah, just.
And it's unfortunate, but, you know, I do think that this is, like I said at the beginning, this is a dying dog barks the loudest. And I do believe that if we have the courage to step up and fight this, we're going to be headed towards a brighter future. You know, and I know you and myself in 2008 and 2012 were hopeful about what we were seeing. And that hope is not, it's not like on our chest, it's not a banner, but it's still in the hearts and minds of the young people that attend my classes. You know, even young white men in many cases were aligned with Black Lives Matter in ways that I don't think that 40 or 50 or 60 years ago they would have been. And I think that that's ultimately what these guys that are in power are afraid of. Even their own children are more aligned with us than they are aligned with them. And so it's going to take a little bit of work. Unfortunately, you know, the last time I was on the line with you, I brought my friends from Ferguson on the line.
Oh, yeah.
You know, there was definitely some people that we, even since that time, that have passed away or, you know, have had some horrific stuff to them. And so bloodshed will be necessary. And, you know, so, the greatest thing that we have is a generation of warriors and people who aren't afraid.
So you know, as Brother Kwame Ture, i.e. Stokely Carmichael, used to say and used to talk about is revolution. We're actually talking about there has to be a revolution in this nation. And revolutions, you know, I'm not advocating for it, neither are you. But in order to change what the trajectory of what is right now, the future of this nation, there's going to have to be a revolution.
Yeah, and I come from the nonviolent school, you know, Martin Luther King School, Kingian nonviolence. That's the school that I come from. But you know, I also come from the Malcolm X school. If you smack me in the face, you know, I'm not going to just let you keep smacking me. And unfortunately, yeah, I don't want it. I don't. You know, some people I know when Trump allegedly got shot, I know people that were cheering. I said, absolutely not. We don't want anyone to experience, you know, blows from violence. But the unfortunate thing is you can only press a hornet's nest so much before the hornets come up and bite you in the butt. And, you know, that's common. And, you know, you can look at what's happening in Los Angeles and downtown LA and see that people are not afraid to fight for their loved ones. And, you know, I notice if you snatch up one of my loved ones, I'm going to not be afraid either. You know,
Dr. Baker, this situation that we find ourselves in as a nation, people look at one man and they say, he's the guy, he's the orchestrator. If these things would not be happening if it wasn't for him. And I say to them, you really kind of missed the boat if you think that everything that's transpiring right now is because of one man. This is, and I think we missed the boat when we look at it and say it's this one person. This is much bigger than that. This has been in the works. Project 2025, and, you know, and I remember, you know, Ronald Reagan, and I was a young man when Ronald Reagan came into office, and a lot of these plans happened even before Reagan. They've been waiting in abeyance for and building up to this point in time, this point in history, and now they've gotten there, and I can tell you, Dr. Baker, they're not going to let it go easily, right? This is not going to be something that's going to go away. You can't wish it away.
No, you cannot wish it away. And I feel like, you know, I think that was the struggle that we saw with 2014 and 2016. A lot of people sort of naively thought once they started knocking statues down or started getting DEI programs in their corporations, like that was the win. That was not the win. That was the bob in the weave. and I feel like, you know, I'm gonna speak frankly. A lot of us Brother Earl, who are deep into politics and trying to fight and try to be more progressive, are sort of like sidelined and marginalized within these movements. And a lot of the brothers, particularly Black men who have always been the loudest voice for truth, were undermined and kicked out. And I feel like, again, that's a part of a bigger strategy to weaken our movements. And until that gets right, I feel like we're headed to, like I said, that train is speeding up.
You know, you're a professor as well as you wear many other hats. Diversity, equity, and inclusion. What are your thoughts about the dismantling of a nation that claims to be the moral compass of the world? So you hear this constant cry, and we've seen universities acquiesce, Dr. Baker. We've seen religious people acquiesce. We're going to take away anything, because diversity, equity, and inclusion means that people who aren't qualified are getting these positions over whites who are qualified, and they can't ever prove or point to the fact that whites that they claim are being discriminated against are more qualified than the people who they claim are getting the breaks.
Yeah, a lot of this stuff is what people used to call red herring.
Right.
You know, it's really an attempt to seize control of the narrative for political reasons. But any university that does not believe in, and any university that does not believe in diversity or multiculturalism or, you know, having a diverse student body is not hurting people of color. They're hurting their bottom lines. You know, I work with institutions all across the country, and institutions all across the country are experiencing this population shift. They're experiencing this population demographic shift. And if you do not want Asian kids or Black kids or brown kids into your, or even international students into your school, your professors will not have jobs. And so administrations that are afraid of that, I think are just like any company that's afraid of that. You don't have customers. You don't want brown people buying your products. You're not gonna have people buying your products. You don't want brown people working in your institutions. You're not gonna have a workforce. And I know AI is coming, but there's a lot of things that AI can't do. And that includes being consumers. And so I feel like, I feel like this is a short-term blip. I don't feel like, you know, unfortunately the Civil War was 4 years, you know, World War II was 4 years. These aren't things that happen forever, but the trauma caused by them, you know, shape generations to come. And I feel like that's the era that we're in right now.
Dr. Baker, what is it in universities? I'm forgetting now where, let's say, a group of Asian students are in this country. And there's something inside of universities, clubs, or something that helped them through their quest. What is that called? They come together and it's kind of like a sanctuary, a place where they can meet and collectively and not feel threatened. Well, they're taking that away.
Right.
You know,
yeah, the
multicultural centers. Yeah, how does that make sense, Dr. Baker? And what can be at the root of taking away the multicultural centers? Well, that's discriminatory. What is that?
Yeah, on one hand, you know, as a academic, I understand some of the fear that, you know, some of my colleagues have. You got to realize that many academics have never had a job outside of the institution. And so for them, you know, the loss of funding or these fear-based strategies really shake them to their core. You know, I'm a technologist. I'm a soccer coach. I still can do labor. I still go pick up a a hammer and a saw if needed to work.
Right.
Unfortunately, a lot, I feel for a lot of my colleagues who have never had real world experience outside of the academy. So I can understand why they're trying to protect themselves. But, you know, my dad has a great saying. He said, it's penny wise, dollar foolish, you know. And when they do that, they're hurting their own products. You know, the best tech companies in the world have this thing called cross-functional teams. You don't just want all of one skill set on your team. You don't want everybody that thinks the same way on your team because your products are going to be whack. And unfortunately, we have these people who are just trying to win political games and are not thinking about the outcomes of what's going to happen in society. And, you know, unfortunately, a lot of institutions are going to be forever hit by these last 4 or 5 years of foolishness.
You know, Dr. Baker, when people hear America first, and there are people in this country who celebrate America first, America first, America first, and they fail to understand the insanity in putting 4% of the global population, separating it from the other 96% of the people of the earth. The Americans only make up 4% of the global population. How does it make sense for you to say we're going to separate ourselves from the other 96% of the world and that doesn't hurt you in the long run?
Yeah, they did that same thing in Great Britain with Brexit. You know, right. A lot of people said Great Britain first, and then they saw how that destroyed their economy. They still haven't been able to recover from these sort of isolationist moves. And, you know, the blue passport is powerful, you know, to travel around the world and people respect the dollar. But the more we do this, we undermine our place in society, in the global society. And, you know, people, unfortunately, a lot of our people have not had the opportunity to think globally. And so, again, a lot of people who think America first or being told America first are experiencing real life problems because of inflation, or because of wage theft, or because of the opioid crisis. So they definitely are looking for a boogeyman. But I'm going to tell you what, who's not the boogeyman? Mexico is not the boogeyman. You know what I mean? They are not the boogeyman. That's a country that we've forever been attached to, you know, in our economy. And unfortunately, you know, if we make Mexicans and Mexican-Americans the enemies, we're just making our own selves the enemy. And then who's left after that? If it's not Mexican Americans, and this is unfortunately a lot of brothers, you know, like, I'm not for Mexicans, and, you know, I'm not for immigrants. Okay, but after they realize that Mexicans or Venezuelans or Cubans aren't the problem, who's next? They're coming right back to us. And the language fits directly with us, you know? And yeah, the train is getting faster and faster and faster.
Yeah, you know, Dr. Baker, Donald Trump, you know, has, and I shudder to think about the impact of the next 3 years. You know, because what is transpiring here is, you know, what used to be accepted, what we knew was the rule of thumb in the Book of Hoyle for a nation. A president only gets 2 terms. And, you know, after the first 2 years, like Barack Obama, George Bush, Bill Clinton, whoever it is, the party that's in control, and when the presidency is flipped over, they basically get 2 years to do whatever it is they want to do, and then the rest of it is a wash. I don't see that happening, Dr. Baker, because I think the masterminds of this plot are doing everything within their power to make sure that 2026 is not going to be the way it's been, and now it flips back because, as you stated earlier, they're doing all they can through gerrymandering to make sure that that doesn't happen.
Yeah, it's like when Will Chamberlain was in college, they made the dunk illegal.
Yeah.
Because he could just dunk on everyone.
Right.
but he still became a champion, you know, and the Lakers right. still built a dynasty, and they brought Kareem to LA. And I feel like one thing I know about young people, they're smart, they're connected, they're fearless, you know, and they're going to figure it out. And they have always figured it out, because I'm going to be honest. I always tell the story of my class, man. One time, my uncle, I was about 6 or 7. His name was Uncle Skeeter. And I didn't know him that much, but I shook his hand. And when I shook his hand, I moved my hand real quick because it was so rough.
Right.
I'll say this. We've been in much worse situations as people of color before. We've been in much more dire situations. And so once we start to wake up the fact that maybe that our privileges are being taken from us, I think that that's when we'll see people acting. And so there are a lot of people, and unfortunately our phones have us all disconnected because we can't see everyone's social media page or Facebook page, but there are a lot of people who are every day going to the forefront and putting their life on the line. And you know, they may think it's easy because they're rigging the game, but it's not going to be easy.
You know, Dr. Baker, the last thing. This what's happening now is bigger than any racism and bigotry. This is a challenge to what this nation has fought to become. And so, you know, democracy and that idealistic, you know, view of what this nation is. We're the oldest democracy on the planet. And so the challenges are still there. But we've got to get everybody who's impacted and affected. Again, I keep going back to rural and urban. We've been separated. We've been divided. And so those people down in urban America are sucking up all the resources while the people in rural America aren't getting any. That narrative has been pushed, doctor, across this nation for a long time, and it's really gaining momentum as it did, and it's one of the reasons why MAGA has come to fruition. How do we solve that?
And I don't think I know the answer all the way, but, you know, I do know that when I talk to students or younger people, they realize that climate disaster is coming. They've seen it.
Right.
And the one thing that I always like to tell my people is that we live in the same ecosystem. And just because the Weather Channel might not describe the weather that, you know, that's going on in St. Louis, it's still the same weather. And I feel like the more we can get down to the issues that are really affecting us, climate change, inflation, the rise of global trillionaire class people, I feel like the more we can really open the eyes to what's going on. But there are no easy fixes. When I was young, I thought Barack Obama was the fix. You know, I really thought right. naively. And there are no easy fixes. This is going to be a generational fight. And after the revolution, there needs to be reconstruction and some resolution. And I feel like hopefully I can live long enough to get there.
Hey, Dr. Baker, man, thank you from the depths of my heart, man. I miss our conversations and dialogue. That's on me. I got to make sure we reconnect. I forgot all about, man, the last time. You telling me the last time you and I had a conversation was the George Floyd thing when you brought those guys on, and we had a great conversation then.
Yes, sir. No, I know you've been busy, but I've been busy too.
I know you've been busy.
Anytime, and we go grab some coffee somewhere.
Yes, sir. All right. Tell your mom and dad I said hello, man, and good to see your dad is still, you know, little bristled, right. You know, because
never gonna stop.
Because so am I. But okay, man. Thank you very much, man. Love you, and I'll let you know when this comes out.
I love it too. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.